everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. We are hanging out today with Mr. Rick, who is back from, well, it was in Vegas, correct? Is that where reInvent was?
That's right. Last time we spoke, I was getting ready to embark out to Las Vegas. So since we spoke, I've been to Las Vegas, San Francisco, and Boston, all in not necessarily order either.
You know, at least they're close and nearby.
Same hemisphere.
Exactly. Wow. Curious. I have never been to reInvent, and you know what's your take on it? How it's obviously a massive show. A lot of things announced at the conference as well. I'm just curious about your take on the whole thing.
Well, wow. It's a lot to take in from a first time at that event.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'll say is that a number of observations come to my mind. One, this is a diverse group. It sounds crazy to kind of lead with that, but I'm a people manager, and I think about diversity in my IT staff and my teams and all that, but this is a segment where it's born now, right?
Sure.
So it's a very diverse group, and I love that. So that was actually very refreshing. Secondly, this is a different mindset. These are not organizations, and not necessarily organizations. These are not people that grew up with the same IT practices as the rest of us, right? So things like, I'm always talking about how are you designing for backup, and they haven't mm-hmm. even thought of that when it comes to pure cloud native deployments. So I have to work backwards and find out what services they're using and and how we, you know, at least
sure.
that's a main conversation, how we can make it available. But some of the same practice points aren't followed in the cloud native approach. But then the other thing I'm going to say, this is the most, I guess, substantive, is that there is an incredible set of innovation going on in the hyperscaler clouds. Azure is mm-hmm. very much the same, but there is a lot of innovation, a lot of new capabilities. I want to say the Outpost is probably my favorite.
AWS. Yeah, I was going to say that was by far, that was, I wrote up a couple things from AWS, but Outpost, for those who are not familiar, this is not to steal Rick's thunder here, but AWS made a massive announcement that they're going into the hybrid world, and they're going to bring metal to your data center. It's kind of nuts.
Well, Azure Stack may have gave them the idea, or OpenStack, but I think that to bring that AWS experience on-prem highlights something I've been saying a long time, that the cloud is not a location, it's a model. It's mm-hmm. how you operate, not necessarily if it's here or there. And I'm going to mess up his name, but Alexander van der Kieken, he's a Belgian guy living in Australia. He kind of hit that in my mind as get that right. And it's true. It really is a model. It's not mm-hmm. a location. And from there, it kind of makes sense that AWS would be available on-prem. And we kind of had an inkling of that coming from VMworld. Amazon announced that they're going to drive RDS on vSphere for an on-premises database yep. service experience. So that was kind of the first look at that. So in a way, Outpost isn't necessarily too far-fetched. But I can't think of there was a new Glacier storage a little bit mm-hmm. more affordable that really challenges the economics of tape. So a lot of things happened at AWS reInvent. And the crazy thing is that a lot of those are available now. So they say, yeah. Hey, now available. So it's a pretty quick announcement to market. So a lot to take in, great new set of communities being born. Mm-hmm. I find myself using Amazon more and more every day.
Yeah.
So it was really a great event, a lot to learn. And honestly, I think organizations, IT organizations, are going to retool their legacy applications with the cloud in mind.
Sure.
And as these new services come into play, they're just going to be one step closer to making that an easy task.
Yeah, it's you can't deny the growth in the segment. I mean, it is the future in some capacity. How people utilize it, you know, is going to depend up to them.
Right.
Obviously, many of us, myself included, think that hybrid is going to be probably the long-term, long-tail strategy of where there's going to be some local metal, and then you have this offload up to the cloud. And
mm-hmm.
Amazon's clearly positioned very well in that segment.
Yeah, I think they're right up there with Azure. And I mean, I know that, you know, there's probably financial indications that might have one ahead of the other,
mm-hmm.
but it's really a two cloud world. And there's yep. one very important observation, actually, I'll share with you that I learned from AWS reInvent. I see, and this matches the conversations I have with customers, because Veeam's in the middle. We're this crossroads of data, right? But there are a lot of organizations that absolutely will not go to AWS because of competitive interest to their business.
Yep.
Are they selling goods? Are they, you know, in the grocery space? Or there is a lot of those types of considerations in the mix.
From very large companies, too.
I think that pushes them to Azure just by that.
Mm-hmm. Walmart's one of them. Microsoft announced the thing with Walmart, and it's like, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense because there's no way Walmart's going to put their infrastructure on AWS. It's just not going to happen.
Exactly. So that's one kind of aspect that I think will actually just allow the two cloud world to exist.
Yep. Which is, granted, I think a lot of us would love to see three clouds, three major clouds. There's Google Cloud doing its thing that's kind of, it's there. IBM likes to tell us that they have a massive cloud, but we'll see how this market continues to evolve, but clearly it looks like Microsoft and Amazon are going to be the long tail competitors here for a very long time.
Yep, they're the targets to catch for sure.
Yep. Other things happening just on the quick news side for anybody who's rocking out in that development world. Visual Studio 2019 preview is now available for Mac and PC, and that does sound a little weird. I don't know if I will ever get over saying Visual Studio available for the Mac is now there, but yeah. And then
For the Mac, especially put that first in the list.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, by the way, for the
right.
Mac.
I mean, it's they're making it a full featured first party, you know, premier development environment, and it's the new Microsoft. It's the new Microsoft, I think, is the best way to describe that. Something else, Rick, this dropped because we all know the best time to announce new features for Windows is at 8 p.m. Eastern time on a Tuesday in a very obscure Windows System Internals blog. But here we are. So I'm still getting my teeth around this, but Microsoft announced what is called Windows Sandbox. It is a new desktop environment. It was previously known kind of as Windows in Private, which in private comes from their Edge browser. But basically what this thing is a sandbox desktop environment. If you're running a sketchy app and you don't know what it's going to do, you could have thrown it in a VM or tried to done other things. But Microsoft now has what's called a lightweight desktop environment for running untrusted apps. This is kind of nuts. I shouldn't say kind of nuts. I mean, this is awesome. I wish it would have arrived a long time ago, but if you're running a sketchy app, you can just fire this thing up once we kind of learn more about it, run the app, see if it destroys your environment, and if it doesn't, then you can pull it out and run it in the real thing. This is...
There's a need for this stuff. I mean, sketchy app is one, or what is this script going to actually do? Think about that.
Good point.
Testing some PowerShell scripts, right? In fact, I think there's incredible opportunity in that space with the Windows Sandbox and more. I look at what we're doing at Veeam. We have something that is what we call a data lab, which is especially representative of multiple systems that want a test environment. In fact, I just posted a paper today about using the Veeam data lab to test your upgrade to Windows Server 2012, 2016, or 2019 from a 2008 R2 system. So these types of things, in fact, testing upgrades might be a good mechanism, but it actually only applies to Windows 10, so it's not going to help you too much. But there's no shortage of a need for test environments today with automation, with scripting, with sketchy apps, with who knows what you're going to get. So I think that this is great to have it built into Windows. It feels a lot like when Hyper-V was built into Windows 8 as a role, and it becomes kind of a server class feature, which one way you can look at this is one more thing you don't have to jump into the data center or to the cloud to do. You could potentially do it on your own desktop. So from traversing security domains, you could probably walk into a little bit more isolation, which is always a good thing. So I think this is encouraging. Mm-hmm. And if I'm seeing this, it's out. Is that right? Or is it in the next build?
So this is why we think it came a little bit early. I believe it's going to show up in the next build. I'm pretty sure that build has not actually been released yet. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see a new Windows 10 build drop in here very soon.
Yeah, it does look like it's
18.3.05.
So, we'll have to watch it. But that's one, I love seeing Microsoft with their enhanced cadence drop in more capabilities more swiftly. So yeah, let's bring it on and get using it.
Yeah. Granted, I suspect, I think they might even say, oh no, it says Windows 10 Pro. Well, this is even better because this is essentially, and correct me if I'm using the wrong terminology here, but this is just a sessionless version of Windows 10, right? It looks like you can just turn this thing on. It's just there. It's just an install of Windows 10, whatever build number, and you can nuke it almost instantly. I mean, it doesn't have any persistence. The thing that makes me excited about this is that I love to tinker with the registry because that's where Microsoft hides a lot of features. You can turn them off and on. But as we all know, tinkering with the registry is a real good way to make your machine not ever boot again.
Right.
And if you can, you know, fantasizing here, just right mouse click and launch a sandbox and allow me just to go in there and play. This is it opens up a whole new world of, pardon the French, just screwing around with Windows 10, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, these are things you wouldn't do on your normal PC, right? And or you're afraid, you don't know what's going to happen, or maybe you didn't take a backup with Veeam, you know,
those
types of things, right? But when I look at those types of test environments and, you know, testing like GPOs, group policy configs, like those are tough things to test. And maybe you don't want to run your desktop with a lockdown experience, but you want to test it that way. I mean, there's a lot of door openings that could come from that. And you know, how it works, and if I understood the diagram, the way they explained it correctly, they're just launching a session by reading existing blocks and throwing writes somewhere else for that state and then throwing all of that away when they're done. So it's a pretty straightforward, you know, a trick that we've learned from virtualization, from ReFS file system about manipulating common blocks and stuff. So it's great that it is applied to the full session state.
Yeah, this will be, we are not even 24 hours into knowing what this thing fully is, but this will be very much a space to watch, at least what's coming down the pipeline from Microsoft. There's just a lot of possibilities here that sound like a lot of fun.
Well, I'm actually thinking about using this in conjunction with other tools. So I'm thinking about the Veeam data lab. Could this work inside of the data lab? So I test within a test, and now that's getting a little scary. We might need seatbelts on this podcast next time, Brad. So.
But it's true, though. I mean, if you can it's going to come down to the taxing overhead, right? As long as there's no performance hit inside of that environment, as long as it runs like you would think, almost like a VM. I mean, this could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of potential for this. And then where, you know, I look at it, ISV like Veeam. How could ISVs or others use it, right? Is this extensible and programmatic? Then we're talking some real interesting stuff.
Sure. Sure. So this is the space to watch for at least one thing in 2019, by all means. And we'll see what else is coming down the pipeline. Yeah. Rick, we got a question this week from Christine. She said, this question, she starts out, is for Rick. She says, I hate documentation.
She said, wow.
She says, is there a way to make it just not be so bad? So there, she was curious on your philosophy on how you go about documentation, because she clearly does not like it.
So my philosophy on documentation is actually where I've kind of found something that works, and I didn't create it, so I can't take credit for it. And I use this every day at Veeam, our own internal documentation, and we built it, it's best experienced on the web, believe it or not. And there's two characteristics. One is a very broad left side index of the whole direction of how you would use the product, with no single page, by the way, being too long, meaning I doubt any single page is more than like 600 words. There might be 900 pages about everything, every single step of the way, but you have a very browsable index on the left. But the part that I think makes good documentation also very up to date and consumable is at the bottom. There's a little thing that we have called send feedback. So the public can actually just click and say, hey, this isn't worded right, or this actually means this and you forgot about that, or that doesn't work as you would expect, or there was a KB that outlined a workaround as such, you might want to link it in. So this dynamic aspect of the documentation, I think, is very important. And that's a Veeam technique that I've learned. I use that a lot every day. I grew up in a world where I'd get these, you know, multi-hundred page PDFs from VMware, or very distributed types of documentation across features from Microsoft, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like I could have one ginormous Windows server. You could have like a SQL or an Exchange server kind of combined resource, but too many times it would jump over to Exchange or to Windows or the domain and other things, right? So granted, you know, what we do at Veeam is a little bit more specified scope, but I do like that kind of indexed view and then the ability to update. That's one thing that I would say makes documentation not be so bad. The other, I guess, practical advice I would offer for interpreting other documentation is to download it all, especially if it's only available in PDF, and get into the index and search capabilities and leverage that. And sometimes I've seen people actually put them in, import PDFs into other things to search them and things like that. So that might be a little bit more work, but the documentation is usually there, but usually how it's delivered is going to be the bit that makes a difference.
There you go. Questions from the readers, things we love, keeps us on our toes and gets us outside of the Windows sandbox, if you will.
Yeah.
Rick, one other question for you. We kind of kicked off with this, but 2019, what conferences are you attending this year? And I know that may change throughout the year, but do you have any plans on what you're going to, or?
You know, I don't know. I saw that question as we were preparing, and by the way, guys, we do prepare for this.
Yes.
But I really don't know what my 2019 travel schedule will look like. I did a big change myself and my team from 2018 versus 2017. We're trending down in the amount of travel, which is always good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did write a few down. I think, I know I'm going to be at VeeamON. I know that one for sure.
Yeah.
I probably will go back to AWS reInvent. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that from a learning perspective. I'll probably hit Ignite this year. I missed it last year.
Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah, that's always a good one. Probably VMworld. I used to go to both VMworlds, but they're very much the same event, so I just usually only go to one, usually the Americas one, just because it's closer. And then last year I went to the IBM event, IBM Think. I wouldn't be surprised if I go back. And then when I look beyond that, I really don't know in terms of big industry events. And, you know, this is one of those things that I think is really hard for listeners to get, is that, you know, I rambled off 5 different events that I think I'm going to go to on behalf of Veeam. But when I look at IT pros, I mean, they usually get like one event that they can go to. And so that is really hard to pick, you know, on what would be that best event. And I think a lot of people in the practicing IT space, they kind of have a say in that. And what I mean by that is like their manager, their boss, their director may say, this is what we're doing as a company. Mm-hmm. It may involve this specific set of technologies. But then the individual practitioner sometimes might need to say, well, this particular conference might help me align to that.
Yep.
And those decisions are really hard. So it's really tough to like say if there's one you get to pick or just two, because that basically becomes a training budget and that's kind of expensive. So I'd really, really be pressed to identify what would be one, you know, must-see event in 2019. I can't really say any of those I'm looking forward to the most.
Sure.
Maybe Ignite, just since it's been a while. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what my forecast looks like right now.
Yeah, it'll be, I don't know. I was thinking about what you just said, for a lot of people, they really do just have to align with the business objectives, because it's real easy to justify to say, hey, I'm going to go to Ignite because we use Office or whatever.
Right.
But it's also real easy to justify, say, hey, I'm going to go to VMworld because we're heavy into VMworld. That's our product line, or AWS. But at the same time, for the average person, if you went to all three, that could be $15,000 right there, which is a pretty sizable hit to the budget.
Right. And then, you know, usually it's like sponsors. I mean, we get our pass either discounted or free. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Brad and the media, similar type of thing.
Yep.
So, you know, it's a different world of sorts, but I realize that challenge. And I take that challenge very seriously when I build content for VeeamON. I'm on the team that shapes that. And I know that people don't get many choices. So, you know, what can we do to make that the choice, right? And actually, one of the things we do at VeeamON is we allow the other like sponsors, Microsoft, Cisco, HPE, NetApp, IBM, VMware, probably missing some, to, you know, bring their story to VeeamON as well. Sure. So VeeamON's kind of unique that you can get all of those kind of in one, leading with the Veeam technology set. But when you have to make that choice, it's really tough. One thing I see a lot of people do is alternate. This mm-hmm. year it's the VMware, this next one's the Microsoft, this one's the Veeam, then maybe I do HPE storage one year, you know, things like that. So that's a pretty common technique as well.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. And obviously, if you have the budget, you just hit them all. But I can't remember the last time or if ever anybody in the IT world said, you know what, I have too much budget this year. I'm just going to go to all the events. It's typically...
Yeah, you don't see that. I see some people that go to them all the time, but they're usually from resellers, and they just have to know all of those different technology sets. But I don't see many practicing IT folks at as many events as I am.
Yeah. I mean, so. And it is I don't want to say a burden, but it's a challenge, right? Because it's not just the event that you go to. Typically there's a day of travel on either side. Right. And then you kind of have that mental thing. It's like, I'm going to the event next week. I'm not going to start this project. And so there is, you know, that laborious overhead as well as trying to go to these things. So.
Oh yeah. And you know, I'll flip that around is that you can really get a really good online experience with most modern events, most of the general sessions, and a lot of them even provide replay of breakouts, right? So that's the type of thing that can actually indicate if you want to go to it, you know, look at the previous general sessions for 2019 or in 2019, say if you want to go to it again, that type of stuff. So it's tough and they are a lot of time, but I flip it around on myself at least. You have to be productive on the road. I think at least two of these calls I've had with Brad have been in the middle of an event.
Yes.
So you got to keep business going. So, and I see plenty of people get on calls mm-hmm. while at the events.
Yeah, it happened. I mean, business doesn't stop because you're not there.
That's right.
So, Rick, as we wind it down here, you got anything for the Rick's dish as we, well, wind down the show for this episode, but also for the year? I mean, it's late December. We got 2019 right around the corner. What's on the top of your mind?
Well, I've got another Veeam event, Velocity, which is our partner enablement event and kickoff, internal kickoff event. I'm heads down with that right now. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I think I'm looking at how can I tell a better story around the cloud? You know, I have a good story now, but I almost need to kind of position my story as starting in the cloud, right? I talk to organizations a lot that are very far advanced on the cloud. And I think my practical advice here is that if anyone would ever feel they're not cloudy enough, chances are that's right. So cloud up, you know, and get ready for the next cloud milestone. And then the other side of it is what I would call a defensible denial, meaning if you get the question of why not cloud or why not this technology in the cloud, know enough about that to intelligently defend it, why your business shouldn't be looking at it, those types of things, right? So that's kind of the one kind of dish of advice going into the next year that would offer up.
Sage words from a good man up in Columbus, Ohio.
Where you come up with that, I don't know. Okay, I'll take it.
Put it on a t-shirt. Put it on a t-shirt. Well, Rick, we very much appreciate your time stopping by, and obviously throughout the year, and 2019 looks to be it's going to be just as interesting as we chase down that sandbox and see what else Microsoft and VMware and AWS honestly have up their sleeve. And for everybody else, Rick, what's the best way to reach you?
Would be the Twitter account at Rick Vanover. One of these days I'll print it up and hold it up, but at Rick Vanover on Twitter. And I'm pretty noisy there. Not as noisy as Brad, so you know I'm not going to be a distraction. So.
I'm a walking distraction, according to my wife. So, all right, folks. Well, that wraps it up for today. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back. We'll be back in 2019 with more episodes. Have yourselves a wonderful rest of the year, and we'll catch you next time.